BDNG podcast. My name is Tina McKenzie and I am the Education Development Lead for the BDNG. I hope you enjoy listening to the BDNG podcast and find them beneficial to your practice. These podcasts are sponsored by Amaril. Amaril has no influence over the content of these podcasts. Happy listening. Welcome everyone to another BDNG In Conversation With. My name is Tina McKenzie and I'm the Lead Education and Development Nurse for the BDNG. So today on this BDNG podcast, I have Ella Guest, who is a Senior Research Fellow at the University of West of England. And we're talking about a few different topics today, but we're going to focus in on general sort of psychosocial impact of SCIM. So welcome, Ella. Could you do a quick introduction, please, to our audience and how you became involved at the university?
Yeah, hi everyone, and thanks for having me on the podcast, Tina. So as you mentioned, I'm a senior research fellow at the University of the West of England, which is in Bristol, and I actually work in a research centre called the Centre for Appearance Research, and we research all things related to appearance and appearance psychology. So it has sort of two broad streams. One of them's body image, and then the other side is what we would call visible differences. And visible differences just refer to any condition that affects your appearance. So it could include things like burn scarring or cleft lip and palate, but it also includes skin conditions. And that's the area that I focus a lot of my work on, and have done research in various different skin conditions, things like eczema, psoriasis, CMN, which is a birthmark condition, so quite broad, and vitiligo as well. And I got into this work because I trained to do a health psychology MSc. And I actually am now, I'm a health psychologist. So I ended up doing all of the training and becoming a registered health psychologist. But I was really interested in the kind of psychosocial impact of living with skin conditions, including the sort of aspects of having to manage and live with skin conditions, but also the way that they affect appearance. And a lot of my work looks at how conditions that affect how we look can affect how people interact with us, and affect things like our self-esteem and our how we see ourselves. So a lot of my research is around that, so helping sort of manage conditions, but also looking at the wider impact and focusing on both the individual but also society, and trying to change the attitudes of society towards conditions that affect how people look.
That's such valuable research that you're doing, Ella. I mean, I think, you know, this body image and, you know, the visible difference things that you've mentioned there, it's so out there all the time, basically 24/7 now because of social media as well, isn't it? And you know, a lot of people with skin or different aspects of mental health or other issues have this stigma, and it just escalates, doesn't it, where, you know, their quality of life is so impacted by it. And it's amazing the work that you've done and how you became, you know, so involved in health psychology as well. It's really interesting to listen to. So with the body image, how did you take that forward with in relation to skin?
So I guess, so with body image, sort of relates to how we sort of perceive and think about how we look, and there's lots of sort of body image interventions and things for the general population, and particularly we often think about people in adolescence, because that's a time when we become more invested in our appearance often, and it becomes something that's more pervasive, I guess. But actually, body image is relevant to everybody, and it is relevant to people with skin conditions. People with skin conditions will have the same body image concerns as other people, and then potentially some sort of added concerns as well if they feel that they look different from their peers. But one area that I often research is something called positive body image. So body image, it's not on a sort of spectrum where you either have negative or positive body image. Positive body image is sort of this separate construct where people tend to have this sort of overarching appreciation and respect for their appearance, and they often appreciate sort of diversity. So rather than adhering to these sort of pressures that we have put on us by the media for everyone to look very similar and have this really, and adhere to these sort of very narrow, rigid appearance ideals, positive body image relates to kind of appreciating diversity in appearance as well, and sort of respecting and looking after ourselves. And we know that if you have a positive body image, that's related to lots of aspects of health and well-being. And it can, it's related to things like increased self-esteem, and also having a positive body image can protect us from sort of negative messages that we might receive about how we should look, or, you know, the kind of appearance ideals that we often see, for example, on social media or online. So one thing that we've done recently is we've tested this writing intervention for people with a range of conditions that include skin conditions, which is called Expand Your Horizon. And it's something called a functionality-based writing intervention, which was originally developed by a researcher in the Netherlands called Jessica Oliva. But essentially, body functionality relates to thinking about what your body can do rather than what it looks like. So often we get caught up on thinking about how we look, but actually our bodies are, you know, these amazing things that do lots of things for us and go obviously much further than appearance. So in this writing intervention, you're encouraged to think about what your body can do rather than how it looks. And that doesn't just have to include things like being able to run or, you know, really physical things. It can also be things like, for example, that it can allow us to heal. So if we have a flare up, our bodies can heal, for example, but also that we can be creative, that we can appreciate things like nature, that we can use our senses and things like that. And even if you have some aspects of your body functionality that might be limited, it's very broad. So there's still going to be lots of areas of body functionality that are relevant. So we tested this 5-day online writing intervention with adults with a range of conditions, and we did find that taking part in the intervention did help them sort of shift their thinking towards what their body can do and make them have a more overall favorable attitude towards their body. And so I think positive body image is something that's often we really pathologize conditions, and we sort of talk about the negative things that will happen if we have certain health conditions and how that might impact us in terms of our psychological well-being. And obviously we do need to think about those things, but we can also think on more of a positive side about promoting well-being and promoting acceptance and that sort of thing as well. So I think that's a really nice thing about positive body image.
That's really interesting, and really it's a different slant, isn't it, on how, you know, to get the message across, really. And, you know, mention about positive body image, I think, you know, everyone has their issues with the body, you know, everyone picks out their own faults with the body, but just to think little aspects that you said there about how the body heals, for example, that's something, you know, that people might naturally not think about. So, you know, your body is wonderful, and it works well, and, you know, it's to get that positive mindset, isn't it? So for our listeners out there, Ella, you know, you mentioned Expand Your Horizon. Is there any signposting that we could for nurses or healthcare professionals to have a look at some of the tools that you've used, or some of the aspects that of these messages that we could get across to our patients?
Yeah, definitely. So the intervention that we adapted, it can be freely accessed and downloaded and used with, so it could be something to recommend to patients. That might be a good thing to do. So perhaps we can link that into the show notes. But yeah, I guess in general, just thinking about what your body can do rather than just focusing on how it looks, it can be something that's really beneficial. So yeah, shifting that focus away from just evaluating ourselves based on our appearance can be really helpful.
Absolutely. And yeah, that's a good idea. We'll put the link associated with this podcast as well for our listeners today. Now, you mentioned different age groups, and I think you hit the nail on the head there saying about adolescence. It's a very tricky time when you're going through adolescence. You know, your body's changing, everything's changing, but you've got peer pressure, you've got you know, hormones, you've got exams, so you've got a lot of things going on as an adolescent. And I know myself, when we see adolescents in clinic, you know, they can be stressed out, obviously, about everything else in the world, plus they've got skin disorder as well that they're seeing us for. So I did hear that you'd done some work with the eczema outreach support group and the youth panel, and developed some tools. Is that something that you'd like to discuss with our listeners today?
Yeah, sure. So I've done two things recently with XM Outreach Support. One of them was developing a sort of suite of online resources that relate to wellbeing. And then the other thing was developing some care plans to help manage childhood eczema. So perhaps if I talk about the wellbeing resources first. So I think the charity approached me and discussed how they have lots of medical information on their website and they collaborate with lots of medical professionals for that. But really what they hear a lot from young people and parents is that children have worries and concerns relating to their eczema, and particularly relating to looking different from their peers. And so they asked me to work with them to develop some online resources to help sort of manage and learn different helpful coping strategies. So again, this is something that's freely available on their website. So perhaps we can also link this and it might be a useful resource. But essentially, the website's got three different sections. So one of them is about dealing with worries and unhelpful thoughts. One of them is about how to deal with negative experiences with other people. And then the last section is about improving confidence and self-esteem. And these resources really are related to something called CBT or cognitive behavioral therapy, which is a very common theoretical approach used in psychology. And a lot of it's focusing on how some of our thoughts and our behaviours around, for example, having eczema or feeling worried about showing a skin condition might actually not be very helpful. And although often we're doing them to sort of protect ourselves, they actually might be making us feel worse. They might be stopping us from doing the things that we want to do and the things that we enjoy. So, for example, I'm sure you'll be aware, but a lot of the people we spoke to through EOS talked about, for example, always wearing long sleeves and trousers or, you know, avoiding going swimming, that kind of thing, because of being worried about showing their eczema and worrying that if people see it, you know, they might not want to be friends with them or they might make really horrible comments, that kind of thing. And often we can get into this quite vicious cycle of really worrying about things when they haven't actually happened, and it can stop us from doing things that we want to do. So the website includes some educational information and lots of videos and animations around how our thoughts can and our behaviours can impact us, and then how we can actually reframe them to be more positive. So how we can pick apart our thoughts and think, you know, is there evidence that this for this thought, or is it something that's actually just perhaps potentially an unhelpful thought? Can I make it more helpful? And similarly, in terms of your behaviours, trying to sort of build up slowly using something called a worry ladder, where we slowly sort of test out a behaviour that we're worried about until we become more confident. So yeah, there's also lots of worksheets that children and young people can work through. And then in terms of the sort of negative experiences with other people, unfortunately, having a skin condition can lead to people, particularly people who are sort of aren't aware of what the condition is, asking questions or making comments, or sometimes it can lead to things like bullying and teasing, which is obviously really difficult to deal with. So that section is more about how you could deal with comments that are unwanted. So practicing certain responses and how we can use other people like our friends or family as well to help us know how to respond so we can feel more confident, essentially. And I think that website also does, we have added some things around positive body image as well, and thinking about functionality in that and becoming more confident. Does that cover it?
It's amazing. I mean, that's a lot of resources out there, you know, the eczema outreach support. And I know they've done quite a bit of work with myself and with the BDNG as well. And, you know, there's some really valuable resources there. And you mentioned some fantastic resources that our listeners can access and get this information. There's also a care plan that you've been involved with. Do you want to just talk about that to our listeners today?
Yeah, sure. So a couple of years ago, I started working with XM Outreach Support and they wanted to develop a new care plan. So there are existing care plans. There's quite a range. But they were finding that a lot of their members weren't using them so much. And also they really wanted to include some questions that sort of prompt to ask about well-being and the impact of eczema on a child's actual life as well. And I think also a lot of the care plans that already existed, they didn't have specific information relating to eczema on different skin tones. And so they wanted to incorporate this basically into a care plan. So we worked with health professionals in dermatology. So we worked with dermatology nurses, dermatologists, also GPs, pharmacists, to think about what would be important to include in a care plan. We also did a consensus exercise where we put out a survey, which again was completed by health professionals and families, to understand what were the key most important things that you would need in a care plan. And we brought these findings together and used that alongside existing information about care plans to develop something for families to help manage their children's eczema. So we ended up with two, one for younger children who are aged up to 8 years old, which is completed by their parents, and then one for older children from 9 above, where they can sort of think about starting to take some responsibility for managing their eczema with their parents. And these again are all available online. And there's something that a family can take ownership of and take with them when they're seeing their GP or if they're seeing somebody working in dermatology. But it prompts them to think about things like how itchy their skin was, how much it's affected their sleep, how much it's affected their life in terms of going to school or doing hobbies, that kind of thing. Also how worried they are about how their eczema looks. And then also thinking about things like what treatments they like, what treatments they don't like, what the triggers are and how they might avoid them. So it's something they can bring to start a conversation with a health professional and to prompt them to sort of think about the wider impact of eczema as well as the sort of physical symptoms. It also has this plan and it's got different boxes depending on if their eczema is, if their skin is having a flare up or if they're just sort of maintaining the condition. And also what to do if things aren't improving, and for example, if they might have an infection. And it's also got examples of what skin can look like when it's flared up and infected on different skin tones, and just some tips about managing eczema. So hopefully it's something that will be useful for people, and I think families to sort of have ownership over and take and use to facilitate conversations.
Yeah, so these care plans, I mean, there's a lot of detail in that. So are they available on the eczema outreach support? Is that where our listeners can find them? Yeah, that's fantastic. And you mentioned that there's some images in there as well. Is that correct?
Yeah, we've got some examples. That was one of the things that families thought was really important, that sometimes they didn't know how to recognise if there was a flare-up or an infection, and particularly because a lot of the examples you see online are all on white skin. So for lots of families, it's not helpful. So that was something that we really wanted to do. So we have some examples of different of images of different skin, and there's also a link to a skin bank, which shows different examples of eczema.
That's great, and I think skin of colour, it's so important to get that message across. And I know speaking with eczema outreach support as well, they've been doing a lot of work with that, and I think, you know, we're trying to progress, aren't we? We're trying to make a difference, definitely, for our patients out there. That's great. So our listeners can obtain those from the eczema outreach support website, and definitely a valuable resource for us to use for our patients. Thank you very much for that information, Ella. Going backtracking a wee bit there, you mentioned about a worry ladder. Could you explain a wee bit more how that works? Because it's something that sounds really interesting.
Yeah, definitely. So I think sometimes we have sort of worries and they stop us obviously from doing things that we want to do. So for example, if using the example I used before, if we're worried about going to the swimming pool because people might see that we have eczema on our arms and inside our elbows, that kind of thing, we might be too worried about going swimming. So what you do with the worry ladder is although, for example, going swimming and wearing a swim costume might seem really, really daunting and something that we couldn't possibly do, worry ladders can help us sort of break them down into smaller, more manageable chunks, and we slowly increase our confidence over time. So if you think about it, you essentially have a ladder, and we break down the steps of doing the thing we want to achieve, and then they get slightly more, I suppose, challenging or closer to the thing we want to achieve as we go up the steps on the ladder. So for example, the first step on the ladder might be that we might wear something that shows our eczema, but when we're at home with our family, where we feel more comfortable, might repeat that a few times. And then when we feel more confident, we might go to our friend's house and then wear clothes that show our eczema, for example. And then after that, we might go the next rung of the ladder. We might go for a walk, but somewhere that we feel really comfortable and with people that make us feel comfortable, but wearing something that, again, is showing our eczema. And we slowly would work our way up until we feel more comfortable at the top. So it's based on something called graded exposure. So we essentially do things in little steps and work up until we become more confident and they seem less scary. And I think when you're doing these different things, a lot of the focus is around the fact that we would often have these worries about what might happen. So actually, when we break them up and do them, if we think, well, what was that like? Did anyone comment, or was it a really bad experience? And often we realise actually it wasn't as bad as we thought it was, or that we can cope, for example, with if somebody notices our skin, we can actually cope with that. We know how to respond. So you can use all of these resources sort of together. But that's essentially how a worry ladder works. And if you find that something's too tricky or too scary and you're not ready for it, you can always go back down to the step below and do that more, essentially. So it's just a way of breaking down our worries about doing something and making them more manageable, and actually thinking about what could help us feel more confident, or what might help us to be more likely to achieve the thing that we want to do.
That's a great resource, Ellen. You described that really well. And, you know, even going back down the ladder as well, I think that's really interesting, and just building it up. And that's something a lot of, you know, our listeners could really build into their clinics, which, again, is quite a simple tool, but so effective, isn't it? And I think listening to you, a lot of your work is based around this, isn't it? It's really incorporating tools that we can actually implement into our clinic to help our patients, which is fantastic. So going back to you, Ella, I mean, the work that you've done already is huge. Have you got any more plans to develop even further? And what is your future looking like? I'm sure it's very exciting.
Yeah, so I mean, I really like working in this area, and would definitely like to do more. I've actually, at the moment, the main piece of work I'm doing anyway is slightly in a different direction to this sort of thing. I'm looking more at social media, so experiences of people who have skin conditions, but also other conditions that affect their appearance in relation to using social media. So looking at the experiences of adults and children, but also looking at things like influencers who have skin conditions, for example. And that's something that we're sort of right in the middle of at the moment. So perhaps I'll have to come back and give you more of an update of what we're finding. But I think, yeah, looking at, because we really do rely on social media and there's lots of really positive aspects of it, but then there can also be lots of challenges. There can be lots of stigma that we can experience on social media, particularly for people that have conditions that affect how they look, but trying to understand what the experiences are and how we can harness that. And for example, how health professionals and influencers could work together is something that would be quite interesting, and how charities can make the most of using social media to support their members, that kind of thing as well. But we're doing some interview studies at the moment, and we're asking people to actually bring in posts from their social media to help facilitate the discussion and understand how they use social media and what it, you know, what the kind of unique aspects are for people that have different health conditions.
It's definitely work that needs done, isn't it? And like you say, you know, social media can be positive, but it can be very negative as well. And I think the work that you're undertaking at the moment is definitely, you know, something that needs to be done, absolutely essential. And yes, we would love you to come back, Ella, and definitely talk to us in the future about that. And I do know, obviously, you're linked with our Emmanuel Tony, who's doing his PhD with yourself at the moment as well. So, yeah. You know, I mean, together we can definitely do, you know, further work on these aspects. And as you know as well, we're going to be developing a psychosocial course for our listeners here. So again, we've incorporated some of the topics that you've mentioned, which include things like stigma, you know, self-esteem, how nurses can help our patients out there. And we're focusing on aspects of social media as well. So yeah, very, very exciting topics, and so glad to have you on this podcast today. So we've talked about a lot of different topics there. The main points that I'm going to just brief you on is that, you know, the eczema outreach support, the valuable support mechanisms and support resources that our listeners can access from themselves. I think the Worry Ladder is a fantastic tool, and I'm sure a lot of people will definitely build on that. Going forward, I think, you know, to build on the social media aspects, what our adolescents are facing 24/7, and it's a huge burden for some of our adolescents and also our adults these days as well. So there's lots of resources out there. Ella, I would love to speak to you a lot longer. Could I just ask two of your key points just for our listeners today? What can they take home with them today when they've listened to this podcast?
So two key points. I guess the fact that a lot of, you know, when we talk to people who have skin conditions, often they talk about obviously being really grateful for all the help they have treating their skin condition, but often they don't feel comfortable bringing up the psychological and social impact that it can have on them. So I suppose I would just say, just checking in with patients about how they're feeling or how their condition's affecting their life in general, so that opens up an avenue to talk about that, would be one thing that would be really useful. And I guess the other thing it would be that there are resources available, not just the resources that I developed, but there are lots of resources that, you know, are quite self-directed. So they're things that people can be signposted to rather than being something that's very expensive or involves having to be enrolled. There's lots of resources that can be recommended for people to look at themselves as well.
That's fantastic. And I think, Ella, as well, the plan is, hopefully in the near future, is for you to do an interview type journal article with our editor. So again, you know, we can get some of these resources out there to our readers as well, which is fantastic. So thank you so much today, Ella, for your time. It's been a fantastic podcast, and some really good tips there for our listeners. And I'm sure we'll be definitely tapping into your new ventures on social media and the developments you're leading the way with, really, is so hot topic, sort of topics at the moment. It's fantastic. So thank you so much today. And we will definitely be putting some links attached to this podcast as well.
Thanks, Tina. Thanks for having me on. It's been great.
A pleasure. Thank you so much. Thank you for listening. I hope you enjoyed this episode. For further information on the BDNG, visit our website bdng.org.uk and watch out for the next BDNG podcast, which is coming soon.